Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us today. A lot is going on in the city, as you well know, and we're going to talk about two of the shows today currently having already opened or just about to open in Kansas City in a very busy theatrical time of the year. We're going to talk to our friends at Actors Theater, Kansas City Actors Theater today. They're doing a show called I'm Not Rappaport, Broadway. It played on Broadway for many years, other places as well. Actors Theater is bringing it back, probably with some new twists. We'll find out. With us to tell us all about it, one of the performers in the show, Victor Rader Wexler. We've had Victor on before. Last time we talked extensively about your time on King of Queens and Seinfeld and some of your other appearances as well. And after that, many people told me, yes, I remember him.
Yeah. And I'm blessed because they're still running. I've left, but they haven't.
Does it help the wallet?
It does.
I'm sure it does. Also with us, the director of the show, Dennis Hennessy. He has directed previously for Actors Theater.
I have.
Probably a lot of you remember him probably more, as he's one of the co-owners of the new theater restaurant here in town.
That's right, where Chicago is playing right now.
Where Chicago?
Big hit.
Yeah, glad to hear that.
Yes.
Glad to hear that. The theater business is hard in this town, I know that. It's really competitive.
We're always hoping to get people in seats. That's what it's all about.
Yes.
Selling seats.
If you remember, previously, Dennis and his partner had Tiffany's Attic and Waldo Astoria, and they moved on out to Overland Park and owned the new theater restaurant. But Dennis is directing here for Actors Theater. Was there something about Actors Theater that attracted you to want to direct for them?
I'm sorry to say it was Victor.
It was Victor.
This is my fifth show with him, and he brought the script to me. I enjoy working with him so much that I said yes before I even read it, although I had seen the play a couple of times on Broadway.
But we were, a year ago, also at Kansas City Actors Theater doing the Gin Game, which I think we did. And so... This was not our first venture together, Kansas City Actors Theater, besides the three at the new theaters. I'm more than comfortable. I'm safe working a project with Dennis, especially when I care vitally about the character. I know that that we will be together bringing that character home or failing to bring it home, but we'll do it together.
Do you identify personally with this character?
Yes, I do.
Tell me about that.
Well, in this particular case, I was elected to the board of directors of Kansas City Actors Theater about a year ago, which gave me the ability to suggest titles for the season, and I suggested this title. I brought them the show because I really have a great deal of respect for Herb Gardner, who also wrote Thousand Clowns, which I did when I was age appropriate to that many years ago, and so I've shepherded this one. And from the moment I did it, it was my hope that Dennis would agree to come aboard for it. Of course, Actors Theater likes him so much, they kind of offered him anything he wanted in the season. So I would just close my eyes and hoped that he'd choose this one, and he did.
Yeah, well, Dennis has a lot of directing and producing experience. Do you have a favorite? Do you like to direct? Would you rather just produce?
I think I'd rather direct, depending on the play and the cast. It's always the cast that makes the difference, you know. And they say, what is the success of a show? And there are three elements. It's the play, it's the casting, and it's then the director. So it's in that order. If you have a great script and a wonderful cast, you'll have a big success. So when you have those two elements, it's a wonderful directing experience.
Did you have... I imagine you did, but I'll ask anyway. Did you have full reign at picking your cast?
I did. I had complete casting authority, which is important for me, because I kind of know the direction I want to head with the piece.
Sure. Well, we have Victor in the show. What is the name of your character? I should have asked already.
Well, it's odd, but his name is never said until the last pages of the show.
Okay.
Because he is what I call a fabulist, a person who says fables. But his actual name is...
Well, you don't have to tell if that's part of
it. Well, it won't tell anything, but it's Nat Moyer. So
okay.
All the other names are not quite his real name.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the storyline, some of the other characters.
Well, this is about octogenarians. Octogenarians facing being put in homes or living out there the last part of their life, and it's about what happens with today's children and what they want to do with their parents, and the fact that we live in a society where the old people seem to become a bit discardable. And in fact, my mother, Dennis, I just said to you earlier that he went through it with his mom a decade ago, and I went through it with my mom
and
last
with
year.
Mine, yeah, right now.
And you are doing it now. Mm-hmm. And there's lines in it that I shudder when I say them every time through the play because they're so meaningful. And so this is really a guy that I know well. And oddly, last year, the gin game, you know, was inside of a nursing home. And it was a very different look. And in between the two, I was able to do You Can't Take It With You at the New Theater, also playing a guy who was affectionately known as Grandpa. So yet another look at the various ways we can spend the last fifth of our lives.
You said something before the show that I found really interesting. So many, because of the generations, so many people are retiring every day.
Oh, Dennis said it.
Yeah. 10,000 people a day are retiring.
Yeah.
So when this play was written in 82 and produced on Broadway then, it's much more timely today because of all these baby boomers who are retiring, who will be looking for some kind of a retirement living.
Yeah,
and what do we do with them?
And probably a lot of them, you know, haven't planned financially as well as
I
they
think
should
you're right.
have. And that'll become a big problem in the years to come.
I think so. That's why we're seeing so much building of these of homes for the aged. They're popping up all over the city mm-hmm. and in different cities around the country.
But this, I predict anyway, a big concern in the years to come.
And you know, when my grandfather, for example, was old and he started to be forgetful, or there was the word Alzheimer's didn't exist, so we called it being senile. But now, apparently, there's various and sundry thing names for various things that happen to old people, and we all pray. But I know that my character says my greatest fear is that one day soon I'll wake up silly, that time will take my brain, and you will take me and put me someplace.
This is true, but then again, you won't really know it.
Well, I don't know. I remember watching my grandfather, who I had immense respect for as an intellect, and watching that slide away. I think he knew. I think he knew that that he had lost that prowess and had diminished in his own eyes and his stature. However, having said all this, I want to say that this is a very, very funny play. This is not a drag play. I mean, no drag. I didn't mean drag meaning drag queen play.
I understand.
I meant it's not a play that drags you down. It's rather uplifting. And
that's really a credit to the playwright, don't you think? That such a serious matter, yet be funny at the same time.
And the other point of view is, what is the responsibility of the children of the parents? What can they do to assist or to make it better for their parents? And we go into that area in the play and try to solve some issues there.
It's set in Central Park.
Central Park.
Is this an area where your character can meet a lot of people?
That's right. That's his existence, that park. He meets all these different kinds of people, and he becomes a different person depending on who he's meeting. So he does have a value. He is a person. He does exist.
Not giving anything away, of course, but some of the people you meet that you're comfortable within the context of the story talking about, and what kind of interactions do you have with them?
In the play?
Yes.
Well, a big one, and we've just alluded to it, is with a daughter who's doing her very, very, very best, but it's not what he wants to have happen. There's also an allusion to three other children who we don't meet in the play, who he's very dismissive of. There's also issues with drugs. There's issues with art. There's issues with dealers, of course.
And issues with safety.
Uh-huh.
In our environment today, if you're an old person, you're helpless, you really are available to whatever's out there in terms of harming you, and we deal with that issue as well.
Oddly, and when this play was written, Central Park became very dangerous as the sun went down. I still lived in New York City then, and although we'd go into Shakespeare in the park sometimes, but you had to stay right on the path. Today, I'm hearing, and I've been away from New York for a few years, that it's quite safe and nice, but this play is set in that environment when trouble could be around the corner.
Sure. Yeah. I can understand that completely. This play when you were considering this play, did you think in your mind, I can do this element, I can add this element, and I want these characters to feel this for the
audience? Yes, I did, because of the experience I had last year with the Gin Game. And we really delved into the aging of America and the aging of our population. What happens with older people? And who are they really? Do they lose their identity? So it was important for me to find those elements in this piece. That's the one aspect of aging that is kind of depressing. We lose our identity as we get older. We quit our jobs, so we no longer have identity as our occupation. We are nobody.
Our friends start dying. Our ancestors have often all died. I just woke up the other day realizing my mom is gone, my dad is gone, my aunts are all gone. I had a lot of aunts and a lot of uncles there. And then the ones who married them, they're all gone. Suddenly I'm at the top of the food chain.
Well, this is normal, though, and I think a lot of the audience will identify with that when they see the show. The Gin Game opens, well, it already opened on the 10th. Performances will continue then on Tuesday the 16th, tomorrow at 7:30 p.m., Wednesday the 17th, Thursday the 18th, Friday the 19th, Saturday the 20th, all at 7:30, a matinee on Sunday the 21st at 2 o'clock p.m., a special Monday performance on the 22nd at 7:30. Is that for performers?
Industry.
Yeah, industry night, you know, performers that might be busy then.
People who do work during the week, actors, and they are off on Monday.
Performances then continue Wednesday the 24th at 7:30, Thursday the 25th, Friday the 26th, Saturday the 27th, all, of course, at 7:30. Then it closes with a Sunday afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock p.m., production of Kansas City Actors Theaters on the city stage at Union Station. The number to call for tickets is 816-235-6222 or online. I'm assuming you can also click through and get them online at kcactors.org. We're speaking with Dennis Hennessy, the director, and Victor Wexler-Rader, the actor in the show. Do you want to talk about some of your fellow cast members in the show?
I do, and I also want to make sure that we say that we've talked so much about the issues of aging that this is not just a show for old people.
Oh,
I think
of course.
I encourage young people to come see
it. But it's something that will affect everyone.
As there's two central characters, and the other one is Granville O'Neill, and who I just met in as Dennis was looking for this other player. I got to read with them because I had already been named by KCAT in my role. So I hadn't known him before, and then he was doing a play that I got to go see. So Granville's going to be immense. He's, I don't know how much the town knows him. I suspect better than I did because I'm a transplant. But he's going to be immense in this show as the other guy sitting in the park facing his issues. That's Granville O'Neill.
We have Cheryl Weaver, who plays the daughter. You probably remember Cheryl. She's done
great.
A lot of good theater across the city.
Boy, when I saw Autumn Osage County at KC Rep.
Oh,
there was a scene, but there was a scene with Cheryl Weaver and Meryl Moores, and when they did a dive across the couch, I almost just lost it. I remember, and I said, I hope one day I get to work with those people. And I worked with Meryl in Diary of Anne Frank recently, and now I get to work with Cheryl, so I'm just doubly blessed.
They did a great job in that. When the movie came out later on, I thought they were better than
the actors. Way better. Mark Robbins.
Sure. So you probably are familiar. He's done a lot
of
people over the past 25 years.
Mark was a founding member of Kansas City Actors Theater, and boy, just, it's unbelievable how solid, more than solid, what is the great word? I mean, how immense some of the actors in this town are. And they just stay here, and I think the audience gets used to them. And in another environment, they would just be huge names, you know. And Mark is one. I've just seen working again, and it seems so easy, but it's not. He's just that good.
Logan Black, I don't know if you're familiar with Logan. He's done the Shakespeare Festival a couple of years, I believe, but another very solid actor.
Mm-hmm.
Amy Attaway is quite good.
Yep. Amy has worked at the zoo a long time. She's also married to Forrest Attaway, who she's just lovely. I get to spend the play falling in love with her, and it's very easy to do. Also about Logan Black, he served, if I'm not mistaken, 2 tours in Iraq and maybe one in Afghanistan. And so, you know, quite a presence. And very good. And we're leaving out Brian Huther. Brian Huther is one of a group of three, I think, now called Dog and Friend Dog, who produce things on the Internet. And they're very, very funny writers, and they come up with some very zany ideas. And they all are actors in their own right with Ben Ogsier and Seth Mackey, yes. Who was in, has been working at the New Theater a lot, and
was in You Can't Take It With You.
Yes, with you. And so have we left anybody out? Because it's really a terrific.
Seven cast members. Uh-huh. I think we've covered them all.
And when I got here, I came here from Los Angeles, and I thought I had retired. And then when I found out I was going to do a show after a couple of years here, I thought I'd just be the beans, you know. And I got on stage and I looked around. if I can keep up with this group of people in Kansas City, and I thought this show was Glengarry Glen Ross some years ago. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this has got to be all the best people in town. It may have been. But there are tons and tons of people with this kind of talent.
We bring in actors from out of town, and they're impressed with the barbecue, but they're really impressed with the local talent. They're blown away by the talent in the city.
And I still am, and that sounds a little bit like a Pollyanna, but I just am in awe all the time.
You said you were on the board of Actors Theater. Are you as well, Dennis?
I'm not. I was in 2008.
Yeah, people ask me all the time about the philosophy of Actors Theater. Why? It's difficult to start a company from scratch. It really is.
This reminds me, I just got the email this morning that one of the members of the Board of Actors Theater is John Rensenhouse.
Oh, yes.
Got me involved. I just found out today that there was a raffle for Arts Day at the Cave, and he won and gets to throw out the first pick.
Oh, my.
And I think it's the 15th.
Now, in the capacity of the raffle winner, not of the performer here in town?
Well, I don't know how it came
to
be.
That's interesting. It could be both, actually.
Yeah, but so John, I'll also say, and I met in 1981, maybe 1916.
Oh,
was that 35
ago?
Years ago? So I was doing a role in a Strindberg play where I was supposed to be very ugly, and the interns coming in understudied the people. And finally, I met my understudy. It was this gorgeous, gorgeous, strapping guy. I thought, oh, wow. How did this come to be? Anyhow, we met here again.
He told us in an interview I previously had done with him that when he went to college, he had a scholarship not for performing, for playing golf.
Oh, is that right?
I didn't kid him
about his golf game.
Oh, I will.
So the philosophy of KCAT is to provide a nurturing background so people who want to be professionals don't have to leave Kansas City. And it's tough to, when there's cities like L.A. and New York and Chicago. But they've done a pretty good job of providing a home. And now we're trying to produce more plays and have a place for actors to go who live here. So everybody that is in a show at KCAT lives in Kansas City or the county surrounding Kansas City, local residents.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's pretty marvelous.
A lot of the same actors you'll see, for instance, you mentioned earlier, the Shakespeare Festival.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them work the Shakespeare Festival and some of the other professional companies here in town. Mark Robbins, a lot at the Rep.
At the Rep, but people come in, and the New Theater brings lots of people in, so people won't get bored, but I think that we're the creme de la creme.
Well, interesting, the notes we get is, keep the local people. We don't need the out-of-towners. They love the locals.
Well, without mentioning names, that's the problem that some of the actors had with some of the other companies in town. Yeah. We're using local people. Yeah. Although you probably know what I mean, but
exactly.
We won't.
You can't take it with you. There I am, and Deb Lukford walks out on stage and gets an opening round, and Dodie Brown gets a round,
Greg Benton
gets a round of applause. You know, the audiences know them, they love them, and for good reason, I should say. They're that good.
They are that good. Yeah, and it's amazing that more of them haven't gone off. So I could see some of them, like you mentioned, Deborah Bluford. I could see her in a sitcom. I wonder why.
Betcha.
I wonder why she hasn't done more pilots, for instance.
I think because she's well ensconced in town and married to a deputy sheriff, I think.
He's in charge of security at
the University of Kansas Medical.
She really came here to raise a family, and that's one reason why she's here. Same way with Craig Benton, a lot of the actors.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to raise a family here in Kansas City than in New York or Los Angeles. Mm-hmm.
Craig told me he came from Los Angeles.
That's
he
right.
was in some daytime dramas, I guess I'm supposed to call mm-hmm. them, as was John Rensenhouse.
So Bobber, so was I.
Which one were you on?
All My Children.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
During what time period?
Well, in the 80s, I got to be on All My Children and I was on Broadway at the same time.
Well, that had to have been difficult.
So, yes, because I had it in my contract that they had to release me at 7 o'clock at the soap opera, which they didn't usually do. But everybody in the soap opera envied me for being on Broadway, and everybody in the Broadway show envied me for having a soap opera. So those were my halcyon days.
Well, you have to be really good with the lines. If you work a normal day on a daytime drama, isn't it, it's like doing another play every day.
My part was never quite that huge. You know, the people who are there year after year after year get the lion portion of the lines. So that wasn't a big issue. You get the script, come in.
Now remind me, the diva on the show, the older lady, everything was centered around her. What was her name? She was a good friend of Walt Bodine's.
And she's nominated every year, right? And never won.
Not Lucci.
Yes.
No, not Susan, the
not
older
Joel.
Lady. The older lady, Mrs. Something or other, Tyler, Mrs. Tyler, or something like that. The lady that also was with the Mercury Theater with Orson Welles.
Well,
same lady.
I don't think we worked together.
But at any rate, she
might not have been the same year.
Something for us to look out.
Yeah.
But she was a good friend of Walt Bodine's. And he had her on his show. Then afterwards, he took her over to UMKC, where the students' lounge was. And, of course, he had information that in the students' lounge, they watched All My Children every day during their break. And she happened to be on screen at the time. So they had her. The name of her character was Phoebe.
Yeah, I was not a watcher of this show. I was just in it.
The kids are glued to the set.
I can imagine.
So they had her walk out there, turn off the TV, and say, "This is trash. You shouldn't be watching this."
I love it.
That's very
and
great.
Of course, the students were in shock that this same woman,
there she is,
who they'd just seen on the tube, was now performing with them. But knowing by sight, people probably know you by sight now.
Sometimes. And it happens just infrequently enough that it's always kind of a thrill. You know, I know the people, it gets on people's nerves sometimes. Although I worked again at New Theater with Jim O'Hare, who all the young people knew him very well, and he still loved it. You know, he said that it was because only the 26 and under the ones who recognized him, so there were still a great portion of people who didn't. So he still was on the side of people who just felt flattered and honored. But of course, some of the people. They can't eat at a restaurant, they can't walk down the street, and it's different. But that won't be me.
Well, you don't
was
know.
A phenomenon, but with the young people.
Oh,
the older folks didn't know who he was, but boy, those young folks did.
Yeah, and yours is an interesting story, too. At one time, you and your partner had two places, Tiffany's Attic and Waldo Astoria, so you made the big choice, and it had to have been a hard choice, to merge the two together and move to a much bigger place in Overland Park.
Our audience, Michael, had moved west and south. So it was obvious that we'd go in that direction, and that's exactly what we did. And it's been a great 24 years so far. We opened in 92, so we'll be going on our 25th season in September.
Yeah.
It's been a big success.
Big success out there. You're more of a management and also directing capacity over there. Is it different doing a dinner theater than it is doing something like this?
What we do is we entertain our audience. That's our whole mission in life, is to entertain. So from that point of view, hearing the laughter is wonderful. That's the best part of my job, is walking into the theater and listening to the audience respond to something I've directed. So from that point of view, it's great to do comedies. And it's also great to do comedy drama, is what we're doing here with I'm Not Rappaport. So to move people emotionally, that's also fulfilling. So it works both ways.
It's a different kinds of
different
shows
kinds,
in both
exactly.
places. I know at one time there were plans, I believe I have this right, that you wanted to do more cutting-edge things, but maybe at another location.
We did. We were going to open the Black Box, but then KCAT came along, and it was a great opportunity for us. And I've done three plays there now, and I've enjoyed all three of them.
Yeah. Do you pick plays especially for Dennis?
Well, we will pick, I can't speak for the whole theater, but I think we're really blessed to have him aboard, and I talk to him all the time about, tell us what you want, tell us what you want, and I think we'll make it happen, because we're really lucky to have him involved, and I want to keep it that way.
What about Ben-Hur next season?
Yes, with the Chariots. We've been talking about it. The Chariots will go about 20 minutes.
That's right.
Oh, I'm fortunate. 2 years ago now, I got to travel to the Middle East and saw some of the actual Chariot tracks.
Oh,
out there.
Of those circuses. Oh,
and the tour guide said, you know, most of the accidents that were fatalities happened at the last turn.
Is that right?
And so walk out to the last turn and think about that. Yeah. And I did.
It was really some brilliant filming in that movie.
Oh, had to have been difficult work for all of the actors on the show. Have you ever done anything as harrowing as that in any of the television shows or films you've been in?
I don't think I've done any of those big spectaculars. It just hasn't been what has found me at any event. I'm trying to think of the biggest. I've done some big name people, you know. The last one I did before I left Hollywood was The Pursuit of Happiness, which, you know, and things in there, but no.
Have you ever done one of the Hallmark movies?
Never.
Okay.
Never did. Mostly when I was in New York forever and ever and ever. And I came out to L.A. with 6 degrees of separation, and only then did I start doing TV and film. And TV, I wound up maybe 150 shows.
Well, you're probably very well known.
No, only a dozen.
Yeah, for King of Queens and Seinfeld. And, of course, the famous Seinfeld, where you were the one who told George that his fiance had passed away.
Oh, that's right.
And his reaction was just precious. Not one bit of sorrow was read on his face. And then I believe it was exactly a year later, you told him that he wouldn't walk again.
Yes, you remember those days.
Yeah, oh, of course. Yeah.
But the line that I think got me as a semi-regular, as a repeating character, was in the Junior Mint.
When I said, that was you as well?
Yeah, was, and that's when I said that whatever saved the patient, I said, it was probably something from above.
Save or otherwise, you know, you never know. Well, we're talking with people from Actors Theatre. The show is I'm Not Rappaport. Opens for performances again tomorrow, the 16th at 7:30 p.m. Runs through the week, the 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th, all in the evening at 7:30. An afternoon matinee on Sunday, the 21st. A special industry night performance on the 22nd, also at 7:30. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and a matinee on Sunday at the City Stage Theater at Union Station. The number to call, the central ticket office number, I recognize it, I read it so much for so many shows, is 816-235-6222, or you can go online at kcactors.org. There is a number also other than the central ticket office for Actors Theater, and I guess you moved offices recently.
Into Union Station.
Into Union Station, so you're right down there where the action
right
is.
Right around the corner.
The office for your for Actors Theater is 816-361-5228. So I want to thank both of you for being on the show with me today. Had a really good time reminiscing about the past and talking about things with both of you. I'm Not Rappaport.
Herb Gardner. And there's a couple of Saturday matinees that I think have been added in since.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Two of them.
So you need to go online to find what I haven't gotten yet at kcactors.org, or you can call their office, I would imagine, at 816-361-5228 for more information on seeing I'm Not Rappaport. You know, the feel of being in Central Park in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much.
Very cleverly created by some talented artists.
Well, thank you. Thanks, both of you, for being with us. Victor Rader Wexler, one of the actors in the show, and Dennis Hennessy, the director of the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mark.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host, part of the Arts lineup here on KKFI. We have Arts Magazine at noon on Monday. We have Arts Speak Radio at noon on Wednesday. And various other shows have guests from the arts community as well, all to keep you fully informed of what's going on in the arts scene right here on KKFI, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. In the second half of the show today, a well-known figure in the city. She's known by reputation, even by people who have never met her. Her name is Billy Mahoney. She has literally danced, taught, and choreographed her way all around the world, and she is having one of her famous tap jams at the Uptown Arts Bar on Saturday, August the 20th, from 7 to 9 p.m. The Arts Bar, of course, is located at 3611 Broadway here in Midtown Kansas City. I welcome Billy Mahoney. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Mike. It's nice to be here.
You've had a lot of fun in the past talking about all the places you've done and all the things you've done around the world. You're quite the traveler.
Well, I used to be, but I did three flights 2 years ago, and I said, never again. That's it.
Oh, so your passport must have gotten really filled up.
It is, and it's still good for another year.
Yeah. Well, mine's good for a while. Yeah,
but there was a time I had to have two passports, and I was amazed. I was in New York then, and I was going to Amman, Jordan. Uh-huh. But I'd been to Israel, and I could not go to Jordan if I had an Israeli stamp on my passport.
Really?
So that other passport was for the Arab countries and Africa. And
well, that's unfortunate. I guess that's changed because we went to Turkey first, then Israel, then Jordan, then back to Israel, and we had no problems
at
all.
Well, that was the thing, going from Jerusalem, to Amman, I had to have a different passport.
Yeah, well, I should talk about the tap jam first, but you got me going here.
Yes, yes.
Was it Hebrew University in Jerusalem where you taught?
Yes, and also at, I can't think of the name now, it will come.
Uh-huh.
There's another school there that's a preparatory school for Hebrew University.
Is tap dancing big in Israel?
Well, then I was teaching jazz.
Yes.
I was teaching jazz classes and doing a reconstruction from Laba notation.
Oh, yes. That is, for those who didn't hear the previous show, that is how you can protect the dance moves for legal purposes.
Right, right. And to reconstruct from what the choreographer wanted. And we write it in symbolic form. On paper, still use paper, but we have a computer program that we can computerize it. And so I'm in touch with people all over the world with that.
Oh, yeah. You've taught and done that all over the world and taught a lot here in the United States. The Soviet Union is right at the top of my list. Were you doing jazz at that time?
No, I was rehearsal director for the Jose Limon Dance Company. And we toured all through the Soviet Union. That was way back in 1973, the beginning of what they called glasnost.
Yes, I remember.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah. And
an era of cooperation, mostly through arts and some business programs as well.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what was it like to teach or work, coach in the Soviet Union? It was still restricted in those days.
Well, oh yes, yes. Our bags went through. I think one of the men in the company said he left his suitcase unlocked in his room, and he came back and it was locked.
Oh.
And we knew that they went through our bags while we were there.
Okay.
But the interesting thing relating to dance there is that the floors are what they call raked. And that means they're slanted at a certain degree. And in the dance studios, it's the same as the stages. Now, this is wonderful when everyone in the audience is on one level, and then the stage is like slants up, so you see the people in the back. And it really makes the choreography come out beautifully. And with Jose's work, it was really fine. But at the rehearsal studios, they're also that way. And you do a tendu, that's a point in ballet, and you're standing inside the room while the floor slants up, and so the leg goes up, but it really stretches out to go back.
Oh, sure.
Or opposite, if you're going back, then it jams up. And so when you're leaping, you leap from upper level, and you've got another foot to come down. So it's that much. But when you jump upstage, the floor is running into you. So the dancers had to get used to that, which for the Limon Company, that was quite a challenge.
It's something that would be harder for the dancers, but wonderful for the audience.
Oh, yes, yes.
You could see everything.
It was Jose had these big circles so often, and they really were projected beautifully, because my job was to be out in the audience and take notes, And the work was really beautiful that way.
Yeah. Well, Billy brings that and all this other experience right home to Kansas City, where she started out, of course.
Oh, yes.
Before she went all over the world.
Oh, yes. But the tap jams are for everyone to just enjoy dancing with no challenge. And it's not like having to do a performance. You know, people, you're not being judged. You just come and dance. Uh-huh. And we started them, well, I did a few, and not that I supervised, but I participated in some in New York City. And then when I was teaching at Stanford, I had my tap class. I was there a year as a sabbatical replacement. And we got the local jazz, the jazz musicians, the university jazz musicians came in and played for us. And one of the men in my tap class that was very excited about this, he was Korean, and he was chef in this fraternity house. And so he said that we could use the fraternity house for a jam session. Well, when I arrived, all the furniture from the living room had been moved out onto the grass, onto the lawn. And the room was completely empty, nice-sized room. The band set up in the dining room. But all the furniture was out on the lawn when you got there. And so we had our jam session, which was wonderful, and everyone tapped. And then one of the students arrived late, and he was a foreign student. I think he's from India. He had just finished his oral exams for his PhD in engineering, and he was so excited to come dance after going through that.
Oh, I bet so. With all the tension being gone. Well, let me read a little bit from Billy's flyer. It's coming up, of course, this coming Saturday, August the 20th, from 7 to 9 p.m. And this is what it says on her flyer. Dancers, bring your tap shoes. Musicians, bring your instrument. Everyone, bring your friends. So you're invited, if you're in the audience and you're brave enough to do it, you're invited to get out on the floor and dance.
Yes, you came as the audience once.
I did.
Yes, I remember when you came.
Didn't do very well with the dancing, as I recall.
Well, you don't have to, but, you know, if you want to dance, and my beginning class, I'm encouraging them to come, and we do improv, and I said, you don't go out there and try to do a bunch of time steps and running flaps, because that's not improvisation. Improvisation is feeling the music, listening to the music, going with the rhythm, and try to interact with that and respond. We can do call and respond, like the drummer can go da 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 da, and you go dun dun di da da dum bum bum. And, you know, if you're more advanced, then you can make the other sounds. But you don't have to. You just feel the music and relax and dance with it.
It does seem to be free form in that respect.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, really. She's got some impressive people coming with her. You can jam with Mike Ning and Victor Perlmutter and some of Kansas City's leading tap dancers, interact with live musicians, do the shim sham, trade fours or eights or 16 or whatever. Yeah, I guess it depends on how advanced they are.
Now, what that means, the musicians will play four bars, and a bar is generally four counts. So the musician plays 16 counts, and then the dancer responds, playing, dancing 16 counts. Then the musician plays. And you in jazz, you hear jazz musicians doing that. The drummer will play, and then the horn will blow for 16 counts, respond to it. So it's sort of a call and response. And then, you know, you can do anything you want. But, you know, Mike, we did our first tap jam I did here was in the Count Basie room of the Marriott Hotel. The Barney Ellis. It was the Mühlbach when I was home. And so anyway, we had, you know, all the dance schools came, and we had the Elder Statesman of Jazz provided the band, and it was really a great thing. All the media was there, all the TV stations, and so that was quite a successful thing, and that was way back when I first came home from New York back in the 90s. But since then, we've done it. We did it at the Mutual Musicians Foundation. Their floor was terrible for tap dancing, but we had fun. And then then various restaurants around here. We were at Charlie's Lodge till he closed and it became someone else's restaurant. But he objected. We had Sunday afternoon jam sessions, and he says we were disturbing the people eating.
Oh. Well, you're there for the entertainment. People
yeah.
like to eat and be
right.
entertained at the same time. Thus, the cabaret.
Yeah.
Now that's,
but we did it at shopping malls. We were at Ward Parkway Shopping Mall when they had a nice platform, and they did regular shows in there, but that's no more.
Uh-huh.
And we were at 95th and Metcalf, the shopping mall there. And
that's also no more.
Right.
Well, we're not inferring anything
yeah.
about this. Shopping malls have just come and gone a lot in the last 20 years.
But Greg Patterson, who's the owner of the Uptown Arts Bar, has been very generous and everything to the arts community. And they have programs every night. Different arts organizations can come and perform. And we don't have to pay for the space, which we're very grateful to Greg for that. And we just come. We have to pay the musicians that we generally have, so that's why we charge $5 just to come and participate.
Of course, when they're in the Arts Bar, they can also buy from the Arts Bar.
Yeah.
When they're in there,
oh,
so
definitely.
They'll have product there as well.
Oh, definitely. You have little tables around. You can get your glass of wine or whatever, or pizza. They've got light hors d'oeuvres and food. And so.
And KKFI has a lot of events over there.
Yeah, and right.
It's a nice place to go. It's called Another Tap Jam, one of Billy Mahoney's Tap Jams, Saturday, August the 20th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Uptown Arts Bar, 3611 Broadway, just across the street and to the east of the Uptown Theater, if you've never been there before. That's where it's located. Billy will be there with her group of friends here, Mike Ning and Victor Perlmutter. Have you known these gentlemen for some time?
Oh, wow, yes. Mike's from Hong Kong originally, and so he worked at Hallmark. He was in their arts development and department, and now he's retired from there, but he's a wonderful pianist. And so we've had some interesting things back 20 years ago or more, and orienting him to what we did during the war. I you know, one of the shows I did, we did Deary, Do You Remember? And I'd written the lyrics, and that when we had to paint our legs and he was playing piano, he says, "What do you mean by that?" And I said, "Well, you wouldn't let us have any silk for our stockings."
Oh.
And that was before nylon was invented.
Uh-huh.
And I said we had to paint our legs because we didn't have silk for hose.
You know what I found interesting, I saw in a similar kind of situation, I saw the lady draw a line on the back of their leg.
Oh, yes.
All the way down to
right.
their ankles. It gave the appearance of having
right.
hose on.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so Mike's been with us a long time, and he does wonderful things. And he'd worked with Bill Evans, and who was his idol, and very good. And then Victor Perlmutter came over here, I think, from Russia or the Soviet Union, and he's been playing with us. And then we invite musicians to come in. Sometimes the UMKC students will come in and bring their instruments and sit in. Rich Hill comes in with his trombone and plays. He's a wonderful pianist and singer, and then he'll sit in when Mike takes a break. And so we have, oh, and we've had nice singers. Tony Oliver, who has a school in almost at Harlem. Yeah, but she has a school training students, and she has brought her students, and they get a chance to sing and perform, you know, and so it's a jam session.
Sure.
And
sure, sounds like it. Now, Billy, let's not forget your television show this time.
Oh.
Billy has a television show here locally, and actually she had it when she was still in New York, and she told me earlier she actually did episodes of the show even when she was working abroad. Like when you were in Hong Kong, you would send a tape back to the station
right.
in New York, and the show would still be on. And
right.
I guess altogether 35 years on the air.
Yeah. Well, when I was a guest teacher in Budapest, I recorded a show there, and in Israel, and we I had my camera, because in those, I had a master's in media studies, and I carried my camera with me, and we recorded a show on a kibbutz in Israel, and then did some editing on it later, but done them all over the world. And wherever I'm teaching, I get the local artists and the visiting artists, dancers, and so it's a show about people who dance, and so it's been 35 years now since we've been doing that. And
here locally, it's on, we believe we have this right, you can always call the cable television station to find out, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on the Metropolitan Community Colleges channel. That's, we believe, either channel 20 or 20 or 17. I know on Comcast, it's on channel 20,
uh-huh,
for sure, because that's where I've seen it, at about those same times of the day. So you can catch her interviewing dancers. And some of the older shows, I noticed you had B.B. Newworth. Yeah, I guess you did that one in New York,
yes,
years ago.
Yes, B.B. Newworth was my student at the Juilliard School, and then she was starting to perform. And so when I interviewed her, she said she had just been out in Hollywood or in Los Angeles and recorded a part for Cheers. And B.B. is vivacious and dynamic, and she says, I'm this very strict a psychiatrist, and she says it breaks her up. Well, now she's on Madam Secretary as the chief of staff.
Uh-huh.
And when she smiles, there's B.B., because she's very stern and giving all the directions.
For those of you who are straining to figure this out now, she was Frasier's wife, Lilith.
Yes.
That is B.B. Newworth.
Right.
Doing a comedy dramatic part, but in real life, she was quite a dancer. She was in... Chicago?
Yes. She was in Chicago and...
on Broadway.
Danced, yes, and then Sweet Charity was... Sweet Charity. She was in the revival of that. And then I saw her first in the Michael Bennett show.
Sure.
Yeah.
I can't think of it right now.
Yeah, I was teaching at Reed College, and the show came through out there, and she invited me to see the show, and so I always go backstage, and she says, oh, yes, I studied Lava Notation with you.
Oh, sure. Now, when I attended your Tap Jam, you showed one of your television shows, one of your vintage shows, before things got underway. You going to do that again?
I hadn't planned that.
Oh, okay.
But that was with Honey Coles, uh-huh, and a Tap Jam in Washington, D.C., I think. So, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, you interviewed the dancer, and then towards the end of the show, got out there with the dancer and danced.
Oh, yes. Well, Honey Coles taught me the Shim Sham. And so that's what we did on the show at the end of the show.
Yeah, it was very entertaining to go see. We're talking with Billy Mahoney, teacher, dancer herself, choreographer, has taught and danced and coached around the world, but she's having her own Tap Jam right here in Kansas City. Billy Mahoney's Tap Jam at the Uptown Arts Bar, 3611 Broadway. Oh, let's see, what's the best? Do we want to give a website or a phone number, Billy? I guess we could. This is what you should do. You should go to uptownartsbar.com, and that probably has a listing of the time and places of all of the arts events.
Right, right.
Yours, of course, is on August 20th.
Right.
From 7 to 9 p.m.
Saturday evening.
Yeah, and we mentioned earlier people should bring their tap shoes.
Right.
You also teach classes, and ladies in the classes have taught out there.
Right, yeah.
They got out there and they danced for the crowd.
Oh, yes, and then teachers from all over have been coming, from Topeka and St. Joe, and they come down, and Paola and wherever.
Yeah.
They come in and bring a student or two, or just they come in to see what's going on.
Yeah, why is tap dancing so much fun to watch?
Yeah.
I saw a community theater show a couple of years ago. It took place on an ocean liner.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And the big number of the show was the entire cast getting out there and tapping in a line.
That's right.
The sound of the tap, tap, tap sound. And it was very exciting for the audience. Even the people that were starting to nod off in the audience perked right up and watched it.
Well, you mentioned ocean liner. I've done several cruises and danced on the cruises. And as the ship tilts back and forth. Suddenly you're going downhill, and then you've got to climb uphill on the stage because the ship's rocking and rolling.
Sure. Now, you teach classes also at City in Motion.
Yes, at City in Motion and at the Todd Bollinger Center, home of the Kansas City Ballet.
Is it hard to tap dance? Does it take a lot of training for folks to do that?
It takes a lot of training to become, you know, a perfectionist in it and proficient in it. But I've got people of all ages and all professions. I have several attorneys and a nurse and doctors, and it's good to relax after your stressful day. And then you come in and you dance and have fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the idea, is to have fun.
Most of my classes are at night.
And there's something about hearing those taps under your feet.
Oh, yes. Make rhythm. Da-da-da-dum-bum-bum.
I guess we all have, and I'm not really kidding, we all have kind of a natural rhythm to us. Some people, it's in different things. But hearing that, getting the coordination of that, that is very enjoyable to watch, and I imagine to do as well.
Yeah. One lady who comes to my classes at the Bollinger Center, where there's an elevator, is in a wheelchair. And she was a former dancer who can no longer, you know, stand up and dance. But she sits in the wheelchair and moves her feet and makes very good rhythms.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Once again, let's go over it. Another tap jam hosted by dancer, choreographer, teacher, Billy Mahoney. It is Saturday, August the 20th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Uptown Arts Bar. The Uptown Arts Bar is at 3611 Broadway. If you MapQuest things, the number to call is 64111, or you can go online to the Arts Bar's website and get information there as well. UptownArtsBar.com. Billy Mahoney will be there. Dancers, bring your tap shoes. Musicians, bring your instruments. Everyone else, bring yourself, your friends. Mike Ning will be there. Victor Perlmutter will be there. Some of Kansas City's leading tap dancers. You can interact with live musicians. You can do the shim sham. You can trade fours, eights, sixteens, whatever. All with Billy Mahoney and celebrity guests that will be there. They were friends of hers. And we'll be there as well on that date, Saturday, August the 20th, from 7 to 9 p.m. Sounds like you have another successful show in the offing.
We hope so.
We do, too. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Here today, it's always nice to talk to you and hear about some of your exploits around the world. And we'll do this again sometime. And we'll talk about different exploits and all that.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks so much for coming. The Jazz Insider, Sam Wiseman, is next. Great jazz coming your way. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hoge. We'll see you next time.